Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Wednesday night, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. My name is Jake Luke, and I'm joined on my screen by Spen Hill. How's it going, pal?
It is going well. We're down in Hotlanta. Just had myself some Hattie B's, some nice spicy hot chicken, and the dust has settled from the draft. So we're into the slow part of the year. Justin Tucker holding out, reportedly, according to absolutely fucking no one, and things of that nature. So here we are.
Yeah, slow time of year. And listen, you expected a draft recap on Sunday, Monday. Listen, everybody else is doing that. We decided to wait a couple days until Wednesday night. So here we are. The dust truly has settled. I think we've let our thoughts marinate on the whole thing and, you know, pretty much like everyone else. And probably what happens after most drafts is you say, hey, great job. Because, like, you're never going to, like, draft a ton of players and then turn around and say, oh, we really fucked that up. No, it's usually, like, a pretty positive thing. Maybe that's just my Ravens experience kind of showing through. But, yeah, I mean, I think positive marks all around. I think they earned it. I think we covered as much on the day one and two live show and podcasts that we did. So there was a ton of coverage there, but we wanted to jump in and cover it a little bit on the day three aspect of things, where they really did make a lot of their hay, funny enough. It's, you know, funny to look back on the idea that, you know, there's no way they picked that many guys in round four or day three. They're going to trade up into round three. They're going to trade up on day three into round four, and they didn't really do any of that. I think they wound up actually picking one more player than was expected. So, of course, that trend kind of is bucked right into our face. But what are your overall thoughts on the draft at this point?
Well, they had a lot of picks. They picked many, 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 many times. I was pretty floored to see them really sit pat, other than trading back two spots with the Bills. So, you know, obviously the Hollywood Brown stuff was a bombshell, and they've taken the stance of, you know, we want volunteers, not hostages. They've done it time and time again, so he's out. But other than that, it's tough. Feels like it was a little funky with that run on receivers leading up to that Hollywood Brown pick, where you see, I think, in the previous six picks to the Ravens, four were receivers: Drake London, Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, and Garrett Wilson all go off the board. They elected not to go try to do the one-for-one that the Titans did and maybe take a Burks or someone of that nature. Or again, at, you know, 25, they trade back from 23 and go with Linderbaum. So Linderbaum, you know, it's Kyle Hamilton's absolutely fine. You know, we talked about him many times on this podcast. Good, versatile player that has an awesome skill set. He's young and still developing and will bring a lot to this defense. It feels like he's the best. We're going back and watching his tape, feels like, you know, it's just having a freaking, like, D1 basketball player that can actually play DB and run around and, you know, really tough to throw over and close windows, all that good stuff. But Linderbaum to me is, like, hopefully great. It just, how much is he going to elevate you in year one from what you had last year? I'm not sure. You can ask him to do some things definitely in space that Bradley Bozeman couldn't, but it's like, all right, hopefully you go from solid center play to solid center play, kind of treading water there a little bit. And hopefully it ends up being a long-term home run with continuity for years and things of that nature. He obviously is a way smaller dude that has to be a tenacious D in the pick of destiny and jam his way into the fucking face of, you know, nose tackles and stuff like that. So round one was interesting. It feels like, you know, safety wasn't a huge need, but you add another playmaker. Now you've added Marcus Williams, Kyle Hamilton, you're getting Peters back, and hopefully that's able to help against the Jamar Chases and fighting Cincinnati Bengals of the world. So it was a weird first round. Obviously not quite as high on Linderbaum as some people were, but at 25, it's definitely palatable. And hopefully turns into a real long-term solution and we don't have to talk about center for 5 years.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the main takeaway with that Linderbaum pick is we have been talking about center for just way too long, you know, going back to, and everyone hates the 2019 comparisons, but going back to when Skura had that good year and then his, you know, knee blows up and McCary has had some solid play at that position. But since then, it's been a problem, not just in pass protection, not just in sand in the pants in the run game, but with snapping the football, which you really can't have. And it feels like this is a move to really solidify that position for, like you said, 5 years if they want to. You know, if a guy's good, he's probably not going to play on that fifth-year option regardless. And if he's bad, he might not either because they're not going to pick it up. So the fifth-year option is a little bit of an overrated thing to me, but like it's a long-term move. He's going to be here for 4 years at the very least, and you're going to see what you get out of him. And I'm optimistic on that pick. I also love the Hamilton pick, as we've gone over. Just kind of feels like a defense-changing, like identity-changing pick to me. Like a guy that's going to come in, and when you think of a defense, I think within a couple years, you're going to think of Kyle Hamilton when you think of the Ravens defense. I think he's going to be that type of player. So, you know, it's just one of those things where we've got some people in the comments, and I think you alluded to this. Maybe they pick a wide receiver if that weird run on them doesn't happen, but I don't know. Something DaCosta said kind of stuck out to me where he was like, and I think this might have been even before the draft, he said something to the effect of, I know people don't really believe us, but we just stick to the board. We just pick the best player every time. And I think there's maybe some notable exceptions to that, but I feel like every year we kind of go in expecting them to pick based on need, at least in some spots. And it's just like, oh, no, we'll just do this. We'll take two tight ends within the first three rounds. We'll take two cornerbacks here, two wide receivers in the first three rounds. We're just going to like take the best player no matter what every time. So, yeah, I think that kind of shone through in the Hamilton pick. And I think probably if it was up to him or one of those other wide receivers, even with the Hollywood thing already agreed to, I personally think they would have taken Hamilton. I just think they probably would see him as that type of player. Same thing with Linderbaum. I think they were probably thrilled to get the value that they got on him there with trading back and picking up another selection, or maybe it like evened out with the trade with the fact that they had given up 100. But yeah, good value, two great players. Talked about them, obviously. They, you know, you sit Pat again at the equivalent of 14 in the second round. You pick up David Ojabo. I mean, that just felt like, and I think I called it right before it happened. It's like, you know, not like I'm some clairvoyant or anything, but like that was just such an obvious Ravens pick, and to grab that guy that was just kind of sitting there, that was very much first round value before the injury, that was mocked to them at 14 a million times before he got hurt. That felt like the obvious Ravens move. They go ahead and do that. And then the other obvious Ravens move with Travis Jones, the 6'5 defensive lineman that's going to, you know, wreck shop and did wreck shop at the Senior Bowl. And just, you know, value seemed to be the thing on day one and two. And those guys were no exception to that.
Definitely. And Ojabo, there's a possibility that, hey, maybe he never really gets onto the field. Maybe he never recovers well, can't catch on, had some development to do. But I'm willing to take that bet. The upside I love so much. I thought it was a swing for the fences in a comfortable position after you've already made four first-round picks in the last 2 years that are ostensibly going to be on the field. So to take that, you know, close your eyes, hack, you know, swing for the fences, I thought was absolutely fine in terms of the injury and a little bit inconsistency there. But if he hits, if he turns into a plus pass rusher, into a 50-plus pressure guy, which isn't even, you know, near the top of the NFL, but it's, you know, upper NFL, then you hit a home run. Then you hit a huge home run. You have bookends. You have Tyus Bowser back there too, also recovering. So ultimately, I think that pick has the potential to be something that takes their team over the top. And because of how many quality, safe picks you've made in the first round over the last 2 years, I love the risk there. And then, yeah, Travis Jones. I mean, he fits the physical profile. His combine testing matched with his production in terms of pressure rate and all of that stuff, all analytics green lights in terms of converting into a successful pass rusher in the NFL. He brings length, he brings strength, he brings what I believe Ortiz was saying, that he was playing, you know, 50, 60, 70 snaps at UConn as their absolute stud home run, need to have him on the field player. And he's not going to get asked to do that. So he's going to be able to be fresh all the time, bring the high urgency in the high leverage situations, and can, you know, bend enough and move his body enough to really be a factor in the pass rushing game while also being a brick shithouse in the A gap and in the B gap and even, you know, kicking out as far as 4i maybe. So Both of those picks to me, and Travis Jones was a really safe pick, I thought, that was simply BPA, and there is no fuss about it. So to have that be your day two following that day one, I thought really brought the draft together. And the fourth round we'll get into and all their later picks. But coming out of those first four picks, days one and two, with Linderbaum, Hamilton, Ojabo, and Jones should net you a minimum of two starters. And Jones, probably worst case, is a pretty heavy rotational guy, in my opinion. And Ojabo is just that wild card that can make this a draft class to remember. And getting into the fourth round, you know, I was pretty adamant about not loving, you know, thinking we're going to go find starters there, being the mindset. But, you know, there were some interesting picks.
I think it worked out well that way. And I think we talked about the COVID factor maybe pushing some guys that otherwise could have gone higher up into another year in college where they get a chance to develop. And also it kind of maybe pushes them down the board because then you got other younger prospects that come up and are kind of ready to go and ready to be picked early. So a lot of talent available in this fourth round that people liked a lot, including us. So Dan Filele, he's listed at 6'9 in what I'm looking at here. He might be 6'8. I'll prefer to go with 6'9, obviously. 380 tackle out of Minnesota. We both love this one. I mean, we talked about this guy so much early on in the process. When we did the offensive line pod, I remember talking about him as a guy who, you know, could be one of those day two options. He slides all the way to the fourth round. And I think this was one of your favorite picks for sure, just like mine.
Yeah, it definitely was a player that uniquely fits the Ravens best. Guys like Trent Brown, guys that are that prolifically large and have that prodigious wingspan and are a little more methodical in terms of size and what they're going to bring, are a better fit for a few teams in the NFL, those gap manpower teams like the Patriots. I don't even know who else really would get into Filele and love it like that. And you see Trent Brown sticking around in New England for a reason, because he can move bodies. Filele, and talking about him as a developmental player, you don't have that big of a crazy drop-off. I don't think he's someone you can't put in an NFL game. Like, he's immediate depth while he is developing, but instant impact run defender. You instantly can go call play action and RPO and familiar concepts for him, aside from that vertical set, and he's going to be really consistently good there. He rated well. You know, again, PFF gets a ton of shit, and I give PFF a ton of shit, but offensive line-wise, I think they do a really good job. Offensive line play, like, what the play call is and what the jobs are usually pretty similar and defined. It's pretty easy to identify offensive line play as a whole. And I think they do a good job grading there. And they graded him really highly as someone who was super raw playing for 2 years in 2019 and then again last year. So puts on a highlight reel. And the thing about him to me that I'll always come back to is that going and playing against a woolly mammoth that can move and has functional strength at that size for four quarters is a hell of an assignment. You know, trying to stick him in the run game one-on-one, holding the edge, you can, you know, beat your chest a couple times, pre-snap, smack yourself in the face, go give him 100% rep, get your hands inside on him and shock him and win that rep. But to go do it against someone that is that large and that athletic, I don't care about his testing, he's a freak athlete, is a really hard ask. And so many times you would see like Ohio State or Michigan or someone else rotate in a fresh guy to go fight him when they keep running behind him, and they'll stick that one rep, that one good rep to when they come in, and then 10 reps later, they are beaten down and he is moving you off the ball. So Filele, definitely a pick I love. I had a second round grade on him. I probably have a little bias towards a gap scheme with him. There are a lot of teams that maybe don't love him, but he also moves really well in space. Like in zone concepts, he's awesome. He has like a really high hit rate in terms of just making contact, connecting, and walling guys off. So Filele, definitely love.
Mentality too with him, I think. I don't know if you saw the clip of PJ Fleck that I tweeted out on Monday, I think. Just kind of talking about him a little bit. It was like he went 2 minutes in depth on how he came over from Australia. And like his point about the Golden Gophers was that if you're a freshman, you're going to have to come in here and play, because like we're trying to like build up a program and compete in the Big Ten. And all these other schools have this top tier talent. And like, we need guys that are talented and are able to get on the field right away. He mentions Bateman was good in that respect. And Bateman was on the team at the time, but he mentioned him as a guy who he might not physically be all the way there, but he has the mentality to make himself into the type of player that we want him to be. And he mentioned that Falele was exactly that type of guy. And coming over from Australia, handling those responsibilities, like it's a mindset thing to be able to do that type of transition. And I think that's something that the Ravens are really going to love. And I think kind of to your point about Travis Jones, like he's going to be rotating in just kind of through sheer size. Like it's just going to happen mathematically. I think the same is probably going to be true with Falele. Like I think he's probably going to be involved in jumbo packages. I think he's probably going to be, I mean, they're probably gonna do some weird shit with him. Like they did at Minnesota where they're giving him like handoffs and stuff and letting him throw the ball a little bit. Like I'm really excited about the pick. It's not just a big beefy trenches pick for me in the mid rounds. Like I think to your point, you mentioned the second round grade. Like I think this guy is, I think he's going to be a big part of this team.
I agree. I think you hit it on the head. They're going to get him on the field. He is a weapon. He is a weapon as a run blocker. He is an oh shit, he's a problem, this isn't going to go well type of player. There will be some bad reps. There will be some learning curves. There will be guys that can take advantage of him, you know, as a rookie, whatever. But that can be said about most rookies, especially offensive tackles. It's rare to see guys come in and be a all-pro caliber tackle, especially that's not drafted in the top 15. Guys have inconsistencies, a big learning curve. A lot of them catch on later in the year of their rookie year, all that stuff. But again, I'm pretty confident from what I've seen from him, from what I've seen development from him, from what I've heard about his game and what he's working on, vertical sets, and him. That's really just the one area. It's just having that consistent, smooth, limited wasted motion in a true pass situation where he keeps everything clean, good hands, good feet, you know, not off balance, and can wash out a pass rush. And we've seen it at times. It's just feels like he's still learning there, and that's a dangerous thing if needed to start immediately. But Joe D said about Joe D, he was like, when I went on my visit there, it just felt so comfortable, and they just talk about Orlando Brown. So Falele is like he's just the perfect guy to replace what you missed out on in Orlando Brown wanting to play left tackle. So, you know, it's not 100%. We still got to see it all come together and this, that, and the other. Things can go awry, but love that pick. Really, really do. Would have been comfortable taking him at 76. 45 would have been a little bit of a reach, but I certainly would have been comfortable with him in the third round.
Absolutely. So I guess we can lump the two corners here together. So they go Jalen Armour-Davis at 119, corner out of Alabama at 6'1", 192. And then they also picked Damarian Williams a little bit later at 141 out of Houston, a little smaller at 5'10", 178. So the Armour-Davis pick to me, first of all, you love the hyphenation. It's hyphenation season. But, you know, this is about 4 years to the weekend that they picked Anthony Averett in the fourth round. And I'm not too familiar with Armour-Davis's game, but this kind of just feels like, you know, bigger Bama corner. We're going to pick him, and he's, you know, probably going to play some solid football for us and not get a second contract, and that's perfectly fine. But, you know, if you have different ideas on how it's going to play out, you feel free to let me know. What do you think?
Yeah, he's someone who is a big dude, is long, is physical, struggles very similarly, I would say, to Marlon Humphrey coming out, and something we've seen probably Marlon Humphrey's weak point, locating the football down the field, getting his head around, timing it well, not looking too early, staying in phase and locating the ball, knowing the nuances down the field of when you should look for the ball or when a receiver is giving you late eyes or late hands or whatever it is. So those are things he definitely struggles with as of now. But on a linear plane in terms of nine routes, comebacks, you know, anything going up that vertical tree, he can really run and he can really stay physical. He knows how to pin guys to the sideline a bit, but can break him down. Guys who are super smooth movers at the top, you know, being able to bust a dig out on a really flat plane will give him some trouble in the immediate. And he's just not the most kind of flexible dude, but he triggers downhill. Anything in front of him, if you're playing zone, something's in front of him, he can click and close. His feet are clean when he T-steps, doing that quick balance shift of your weight and coming downhill. So definitely a physical player, definitely has a ton of skill, definitely has been hampered by injuries and has, you know, a decent list of injuries. 1 year as a starter and held his own, definitely had his ups and downs, but had a lot of good tape too. So fits their profile, long, strong, down to get the friction on and has some work to do, but hopefully you don't need him in that heavy, high leverage role immediately. You can pick and choose your spots and he can learn from a fellow Bama corner that has a similar physical profile and a really smart corner that does have ball skills and does know when he can go for the ball and all those things in Marcus Peters. But it's going to be on him to get it together. So I like that pick. Could just end up being a guy that, you know, is your third, fourth corner for a couple of years. And that's fine. If you can get that in the fourth round, I think that's a hit.
Definitely. So I mentioned that I didn't watch a ton of Armour Davis. I knew who he was, though, obviously. Full disclosure, I did not know who Damarian Williams was. So I haven't watched anything of him. What are your thoughts on him?
Really physical. Kind of fits just like putting things I said about Jalen Armour Davis into the nickel position. Not someone you want in a foot race over top, but definitely someone. I think he's kind of like a little Jalen Petrie without quite the ridiculousness that Petrie had. Similar kind of player. He can really knock dudes back at the line of scrimmage. He wants to eat your lunch off the line of scrimmage and get in your face, press jam you. He has a two-hand jam that in the NFL against some super high-level guys might make him whiff and miss, but really can stymie dudes at the line of scrimmage. Wants to go take guys' heads off in the run game. Gives you a ton of physicality at a smaller size and just knows where to be. He's a red star kind of guy for them. He was a two-year team captain. The Ravens love that. John Harbaugh loves that. So more options in the nickel. You got Ardarius Washington in there. You got him in there. You got Brandon Stevens is a bigger one. I would be remiss to think that Kyle Hamilton doesn't line up in the slot quite a bit as that jumbo nickel. And Chuck Clark comes down in the slot too. So now you've got different body types, different options, different skill sets to find answers and find matchups and certain games. You want certain guys on the field more. So I think there's definitely depth at that nickel position. They do like Khalil Dorsey and the other one whose name's escaping me, Kayvon Seymour.
Yes.
Yeah, they like both of those guys. They've talked about them 10,000 times secretly. And so they've suddenly got a ton of nickel options to follow up Tavon Young. So they definitely feel good about that.
Absolutely. So that was their that was one of their double dips. They had another one with Charlie Kohler, Chuckles Kohler out of Iowa State at 6'6", 6'7", in some spots. I've seen 260 tight end. And then they also grabbed Isaiah Likely at 6'4", 240. Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, and that was an interesting situation because in between those two, we don't have to spend too much time on Jordan Stout, but in between those two, they picked Jordan Stout, and then it turns out that the Steelers, kind of right before the Ravens picked Likely, took Calvin Austin, who they wanted per the Peter King article that came out, I think on Monday, or maybe on Sunday or something like that, but Peter King was in the room, and they were talking about how they wanted Calvin Austin. The Steelers, of course, jump up and get him, or I don't know if they traded up or whatever, but they took him before him. So Harbaugh kind of speaks up and says, what about Likely? Like, do you want to find a spot for him? So they go ahead and pick Likely. But the two tight ends and the punter, what were your thoughts there? I liked what I saw from what I did watch of Kohler early on. Didn't watch too much Likely. Kohler, I made this comparison in the group chat. Like, he reminds me of what Max Williams, like, wound up being, which was like a perfectly fine, like, rotational tight end with a little bit of size, a little bit of speed when he got the ball in his hands, and just like a decent red zone threat and like a solid blocker, just like a utility player. And if you get that in like the fourth round, I really like that a lot. And then a lot of people seem intrigued by Likely. So what are your thoughts on those two guys?
Kohler, I really like a lot. 6'6" and a half, 34 and a half inch arms, gigantic hands. He's a ball vacuum. He's a receiver. He is insurance for Mark Andrews, that you have a field stretcher that can, you know, in the event that immediately if Mark Andrews goes down, you have someone who can still run the seam, have that huge catch radius over the middle of the field. He's a ball vacuum, man. I like what he does. He's not someone who is as – he tested really well, which was surprising. And based on what I saw on tape, and again, guys can reshape their body composition throughout, you know, 2 months of really hardcore training where they're paying a lot to a facility, but not someone who's really subtle or shifty or powerful at the stem in terms of breaking a route off or anything like that, but smart, finds soft spots in zones, you know, knows when to sit down, not super dynamic after the catch, but he can run. He can scoot enough where if he's got a runway, he can go, you know, take it from the, you know, he gets a little wide opening in the soft spot. He can go run in from the 15, give you a nice little, you know, 25-yard touchdown or something. So I don't think he's necessarily going to be like a big play guy, which is where I think Likely kind of profiles a little better. But I just like that he is Mark Andrews' insurance. He's kind of what we wanted, you know, to see Josh Oliver become, it feels like. Someone who is a more confident, nuanced hands catcher. His production was ridiculous. If you go watch Iowa State games, he is arguably their offense many, many times. He is a huge factor. Someone you put in the slot, no sand in his pants, can't do shit as a blocker at this point in time. He is not even like what Mark Andrews' body type was. And he, even if you like read Zuerlein's little piece on him, it's like, wouldn't AFC scout says, wouldn't be surprised to see him turn to Mark Andrews. He's just more string bean-ish. I mean, he's ridiculously tall and thin.
Lower body is really tapered for a tight end. Like, I definitely noticed that.
He's a mega jumbo slot, but tested really, really, really well, which was interesting. So we'll see what he becomes. Mark Andrews, you know, wasn't quite as much of a string bean, but similarly was kind of, you know, not asked to and didn't really know how to engage at the point of attack that much. And suddenly you're in, you know, Greg Roman's offense, Greg Roman, a tight ends guru. Mark Andrews has made so much improvement, was similar in that Oklahoma offense, has gone through that same obstacle of being, you know, a basically completely ineffective blocker in college that was a glorified wide receiver and can come in and learn the ropes. You got Boyle, you got Ricard, all those guys. They're going to have a fun time. And then that brings us to Likely, who has some pretty crazy ball skills. You know, was in a really, you know, college RPO crazy offense with a lot of fun stuff in it, got some free runs at times, but he can be a big play guy. He can go run after the catch, is familiar with the nuances of an option motion heavy offense. He was lined up in the backfield a lot. He was lined up split on the line of scrimmage a lot. He was lined up in the slot. So he's kind of familiar with what a Ravens offense is, it feels like, in usage and where he'll be. Think he's a big red zone threat. Think he knows how to kind of separate at the last second in the red area. And to me, pairing those two guys together is just big bodies that you can use in the red zone and go throw a meatball and trust them to kind of go get it or put it in a weird spot, and they might be able to hawk it down because they're gigantic. So Likely not quite as enormous, but it's the double dip. So between those two, and taking tight ends in the fourth round, to be honest, isn't super low. Like, not a ton of tight ends go day one. You know, some usually go day two, and then like early day two, second round, and then like late second, early third. That's when you start to see, like, you know, the pretty good college tight ends come off the board. So those guys in the fourth round, not like getting a corner or a tackle or, you know, the primo position studs in the fourth round. So I think the double dip at tight end there is pretty heavy capital.
It feels, and yeah, it feels to me, once you get past a certain point, like, this might be a stupid thing to say, I'm sure, like, maybe it'll be refuted, but like, it feels kind of bust proof after a certain point, because you're talking about a guy that's going to get in the middle of the field. He's going to get plenty of open looks. He's going to get off the line clean and just able to get his head around and look the ball in. If you know, he's anything worth his salt, he'll be able to catch the ball in certain situations where he gets open. So like, you're talking about just adding production, kind of similar to running back, not quite to that extent. I think there's maybe a little bit more of a transition involved, but it's not the same thing it was 10 years ago where everyone's like, oh, tight end is like this super hard position to transition to. You're going to Todd Heap it and like redshirt a year. It's like, no, it's these guys are coming into the NFL ready to play because they're playing in these high flying offenses in college, and they're ready to rock. So,
yeah, I mean, rookie tight ends usually don't make a huge contribution overall. It's rare to see guys catch, you know, 30 passes as rookie tight ends, to be honest, but those, you know, Kohler can be an element in this offense to me pretty quickly, especially in that red area. So I think they'll have certain looks for those guys. Maybe we see Likely used in the backfield. Maybe we see some 12 personnel and some of the two tight end stuff with Kohler in the slot. Andrews also in the slot, you know, messing around with some motions and things, trying to have those fun tendencies. I like when they do the big boy screens too. We've seen a couple times where they put like Ricard, Andrews, and Boyle on the same side and end up running a three-man screen with those guys, things like that. So
I love how like Greg Roman literally never runs screens, and like those are the ones that he runs, of course.
And they're sick.
They are sick. I got to give him credit, but run more screens, Greg. Yeah. So
he's never gonna.
No, he will not. Okay. So that covers that. Ravens and the draft picking running back Tyler Beatty out of Missouri, 5'8", 194. I don't know if he's a Randallstown native, but it sounds like he spent a lot of time there growing up, which is right by me. So shout out to you, Tyler Beatty, coming home here.
Yeah, Beatty, fun player, man. Think he's a real pass catcher back. Think he has a little more thunder to his game than Justice Hill. Justice Hill's had some nice moments, though. His injury, definitely unfortunate. Would have been fun to see what he could have done last year after the other two went down. But Beatty is going to push. He's going to push and push and push. He's plus in pass pro. He's plus as a pass catcher. He can break tackles. He has enough speed to be explosive and get explosive gains. So I don't know. Six-round backs don't, you know, have much lower success. Again, it's like running backs and tight ends. You can kind of find those dudes wherever in the draft. I don't think it really matters position-wise. But look at that handsome – look at RDT with that handsome picture.
He's definitely got a puka shell necklace on underneath that shirt.
Yeah, he does. He looked good there, RDT. Way back in the day, probably. That was probably like senior week or something.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, Beatty is a fun player. I don't know if he's ever going to be like, you know, a starter getting 1,200 yards, but maybe gives you a little Justin Forsett element or something to try and throw a familiar name. Little element of somebody who can do some damage, a little smaller, but well-rounded game. He's going to be a contributor on special teams in both the return game and otherwise. So I think Beatty can definitely be a dude, be a guy, be a pal.
Yeah, he can. It seems like there's playmaking ability there. It seems like drawing, you know, some Tariq Cohen comparisons from some people, which is probably, you know, maybe a little bit of a high-end comparison for a six-round pick. I probably wouldn't go there based upon what I watched of him, but I don't know. Yeah, I like the pick a lot. It's another thing. It just feels a little bust-proof to me. Like, this guy is going to come in and he's going to compete with Justice Hill and, like, whoever else they decide to bring in at running back, but it's not a lock that he makes the team, but I think he's got himself a pretty good shot, which is cool for a six-round pick. So that's Beatty. We can touch on Jordan Stout a little bit. Like, we kind of have to. I'm realizing this now because, like, this was kind of your whole thing, was Jordan Stout over the punt god. Which, shout out to RDT. I heard them refer to Matt Areza as the punt fraud on Exit 52 the other day, I think. So what are your thoughts on Jordan Stout out of Penn State?
Matt Areza is like a fraudulent, like Kenny Powers of a punter. He like has the hype video. He talks the talk.
You would know all about that.
He can bench a lot. He can, you know, he talks the talk.
Are you saying he's the Ben Mason of punters of this year?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes, I firmly am saying he's the Ben Mason of punters this year. So Stout had, you know, they talked about it. I don't even know. I honestly didn't realize he does kickoffs too. So there you go. Save the tuck. That if they didn't take Stout, then maybe Tucker does.
And he can also kick field goals with Tucker's holdout.
Yeah, so Stout helps with that because now Tucker doesn't have to kick off anymore. So that was the whole hypothetical holdout was over kicking off. JK, but Stout, man, holding is very near and dear to him. He talks about that a lot, and I think that's what Sam Cook does the best. That is why Sam Cook is valuable, is because he's a freaking awesome holder. And Stout seems to take that very seriously. God, I almost wanted to say, RDT, I almost wanted to say like 2011. I was going to say Ocean City 2011. I thought that, I swear.
You were close. I mean, you were very close. Dewey Beach 2012 is what he's saying for the listeners. So slick back hair, white bathing suit, sloppy steaks, white couch at the Starboard. That's our non sequitur there. So anything else on Stout?
I think he's going to be a badass, and that's a funny way when I was basically talking a lot of smack, saying, "Oh yeah, we have 6 fourth round picks. You know, who's going to be? You know, go find a starter." He's going to start for years and years and years. And then we have here to transition into the whole Calvin Austin thing. It's like, I think that would have been a fun way to replace the vertical element that existed with Hollywood Brown that you now need. But again, what was he? The, you know, 20th receiver coming off the board. So there's this whole hoopla about it, but
he's probably not really making a huge impact this year. You know, he's not making a Hollywood impact this year. You got to sign him.
Sure. Like him a lot. Aggressive releaser. At 5'7", he can do damage on the outside, kind of a la Taylor Gabriel a little bit. Definitely would have been nice, but it's fine.
So sign Taylor Gabriel.
Sure.
Just sign a guy. Like, you don't have to worry about a fourth round receiver. Just sign a guy. There's a couple good options out there.
See, and then we have Troy T in the comments here, and he says, I think Ravens fans would have been happier if they pretend Beatty was a fourth round pick and the punter was a sixth round pick. As a first team SEC and over 1,600 yards from scrimmage, he could have been the fourth. See, Troy, you would think that, but then they'd just be mad that it was a running back and not a receiver still.
Primo position studs. I've always
complained about position that. Studs. Punter is a primo position on day three.
Listen, people joke around about that, but if you're trying to play some ball control, like field position, you know, type of football like they are, if this guy is pinning teams deep as early as this year, which it sounds like Sam Cook might be contemplating retirement. If he's like pinning teams deep in the same way that who's the kid in Seattle, Dixon, has been the last couple of years, like that could be pretty big for a defense that just stacked itself up pretty nicely with this draft.
His net, or as we love to say in the business world, his net is
net. Are you gonna circle back and then touch base on his net?
His net, baby. But yeah, he seriously can pin dudes. He's got, you know, maybe not. He if Matarazza has 100% leg, he has like 96 at worst. He has an absolute piss missile right leg. So love that still. Love all that stuff with the punter. I do love the punter. And again, I will toot my own horn. I said it like three times before the draft. He is punter one, and the Ravens are going to have a fun punter with luscious flow. He's got some baby blues. He's going to be a little lady killer. Him and JT.
He's wearing number 11. He's Jordy 2-6. That is such a TFM if I've ever seen one.
Exactly. So him and Tucker are just going to be the all vein team, VEIN, and they're going to love themselves so much.
This is going to be Wooderson and Randy Pink Floyd walking into the pool hall together. That's what this duo is going to be. Just absolutely wrecking shop. So yeah, that's cool. You know, they get the punter in the fourth round. People made a stink about it to some extent, but I kind of like it for that reason. So,
and to go into like just like fan BS is like Stout with his flow. Now Tucker's got the clean cut, you know, super hair gelled opera man.
He's a dad, you know. Now. He's taking care of business. He's waking up early. He's you know, he's got a mortgage. He's saving up for young what's his kid's name's college fund.
Huckleberry Kingsley. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got a kid with like a Gen Z name, I think. But yeah, whatever. We don't have to get into Justin Tucker's kid's name. But yeah, that's that. So
the dichotomy there is fun. That's all I have to say. Stout looks like a real bro coming out of Penn State. Got the flow going.
He looks like he could have walked off like he could have walked off like the lax practice field at Gilman and just like walked down 83 and like entered M&T Bank Stadium. That's what he looks like. So it's good for that reason. That reason alone. Anything else on the 2022 NFL draft for the time being?
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Just that round one and what they, we have Julian in the comment, Ainsley Tucker.
I don't think it's Ainsley. I know the name. I don't know.
What I said Kingsley too, completely just making stuff up. And yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
But overall, you know, the wide receiver stuff is what it is. You know, Bateman, if you have healthy Bateman for 17 games, I think we're going to be talking about, you know, them finally having the guy. And Hollywood was the guy. But Bateman just has a more well-rounded skill set, can do it on all three levels and all that stuff. So if on the other end, Andrews or Bateman go down, you don't make a move, you bring in another warm body like a Sammy Watkins kind of guy, like probably feels kind of inevitable. Hashtag speculation season on wide receivers. Thank you so much for that, Ravens. But those will suck. It'll suck again, and they'll be one-dimensional. And if they make the playoffs, they'll probably have trouble if they're one-dimensional against a good, competent playoff-level defense. At the same time, you know, it's like people are like, 2019, 2020, 2021, whatever. Getting the offensive line right, if Linderbaum is the dude and you do have Moses and you now have McCary as your insurance at left tackle, which feels pretty darn good, and Stanley, you know, maybe relieved a little bit of pressure of timeline of if he's not quite ready and needs to come back halfway through the year, yada, 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 so on and so forth. Lamar Jackson has hopefully the line. They have Bateman, who profiles as a wide receiver one. They have Andrews, who profiles as a wide receiver one. They're going to have those backs back. And I don't know. It's shit or get off the pot time. It's time to make some real noise offensively and avoid that injury bug. If so, that, you know, can derail everything and can blow this entire kind of organization up if something like that happens again, because it's just too much to deal with. But this offense should be pretty darn good. And hopefully Bateman can do the damn thing. But looking back on the draft, not adding that element could haunt them. But it also could be, you know, if Linderbaum is what everybody thinks he is and turns into a Pro Bowl All-Pro guy, and Hamilton turns into a Pro Bowl All-Pro guy, and you drafted really, really good, hopefully blue chip kind of guys in the first round, then you knock it out of the park. And like I said, you know, Ojabo, I think, is what can make this a grand slam of a draft if he comes back. And between those first four picks, looking at that haul, if you want to go back and look at your mock draft, wherever you had someone from whatever, that haul is pretty damn good, those first four. So I like this class. They have a lot of guys coming in, a lot to figure out. But moves are not finalized. I think we'll see Justin Houston come back ultimately and go from there. If James Bradberry hits free agency, I think he does not sign with the Ravens. I think someone will pay him too much money. But I would like to have Bradberry. And this team's fine to be competitive, even if they don't go find, you know, another primo position stud.
Absolutely. So you said it all as well as I could have. So I will leave you with this and give you one guess at the name because I found it.
Of his son?
Yes. It's pretty funny.
The first thing that came to my head, I don't know why, it just came in, was Zadarius, but that obviously wouldn't make any sense. I was just like thinking of crazy names. I'm just going to go with Riley spelled weird.
It's pretty close. It's Easton.
Oh my.
That's God. A dude that grew up in like Westlake in Austin and like played some baseball growing up. He's naming his son Easton. Are you kidding me? You think that kid's getting a bid?
Easton Tucker. He's going to be an issue at Gilman. I'll tell you that much.
Oh yeah, he's going to be killing the ladies just like Jordan Stout was back in the day. So, yeah, I guess that's all we got then. Fun show, I think. Really, really tight, nice 40 minutes here. Covered the draft very well. Any other thoughts?
Hopefully, they netted some studs. That's all you got to say.
Alrighty, well, I totally agree with you there. Thank you, everyone, for listening on the live stream. Got a decent little number here in on a Wednesday night, and to everyone listening on a Thursday as well. That's it for the draft for the time being. We'll obviously be covering it. We'll maybe do some deep dive film breakdown type of episodes. On Friday, I got something a little bit different coming for you guys, actually. I teased this a little bit on Twitter. We'll be announcing it tomorrow, probably around noon or so. I'll kind of put something out explaining it a little bit. It's an interview with someone who I think a lot of you will recognize. Some of you might not, but a person who I think is pretty central to Baltimore over the last 40 years. Some of you have tried to guess at it. None have quite gotten it. And it was just an absolute bucket lister for me. It was just me doing this one. You couldn't make it, unfortunately. But yeah, it was a really cool chat. It's very different. It's not football related literally at all. So if you're expecting that.
Well, at this point, you finished it. You can say it if you want. You don't have to if you don't want to.
No, I'm not going to. I'm going to announce it tomorrow and kind of explain it. But
such a little tease.
Yeah, I am a little tease. I like to kind of, you know, my stance on edging. But yeah, it's a really cool one. It's one that some people might want to skip, and I totally will not begrudge you on that. But for me, it was totally worth the price of admission. I think it will be for you guys as well. So stay tuned to @podcastbeatdown on Twitter. And my Twitter @JakeLew tomorrow, where we will be chopping up a little bit more, and that'll release Friday, like I said. So that's that. You can follow Spencer @Ravens4Dummies. That's the number 4 in the middle. Thank you guys for listening. Spen, you enjoy your time down there in Hotlanta, man. Hit up some of those strip clubs and get that. Was it Lou Williams' chicken that he liked?
Magic City.
Yeah, exactly. Get some of that lemon pepper chicken and enjoy yourself. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again on Friday with the interview and then, early in the week, next week.
See ya.
Arrivederci.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
Super Bowl out of me. Need that.